Hey, y'all. Welcome to Questions You Didn't Ask. Did you know that this very spot could be showcasing your business or event? Whether it's an audio ad on our podcast or a visual ad on our new YouTube station or even both, we've got the space for you. Nyesha Frey Consulting is reaching a growing audience of over 1,000 leaders who are passionate about health equity, social justice, and civil rights activism. These are professionals just like you, working across higher education, research, healthcare, nonprofit, government, and even public health sectors. If you're ready to get your message in front of a dedicated and engaged audience, send me an email at nyeshafreyconsultingllc@gmail.com. Let's talk about how we can help you connect with the people who need to hear about your services and products that advance health equity and wellness. Don't miss out. Get in the mix and let's make an impact together. Welcome back to Questions You Didn't Ask with me, Nyesha Frey, and my guests, Melba Perry and Jessica Burris, as we continue the series From Birth to Beyond, unveiling challenges of maternal and infant health. Let's get back into the discussion. So ladies, if you're thinking about having a baby, if you are pregnant, if you just gave birth, check in, check it out. Are there doulas? Are there midwives? Are there what do we call them?
IBCLC.
Is there a CLC, even if it's not an IBCLC? Are there lactation consultants that you can talk to? There are people out here and organizations out here looking to help support your health and your well-being. And I think that that's really important. But we also need to challenge our systems and our organizations to do better about communication and outreach. And that's one of the reasons why I have this podcast. You all know that I have my company, Nyesha Frey Consulting LLC, and I'm not a lactation consultant. I do health equity research and practice, right? So this is an arm of my business, health communication, right? The podcast is about health communication to address these questions and these issues that a lot of people don't even know that there are answers to or that there are resources or professionals. You know, these are, and the great thing about it is sometimes you just need to start having conversations with the people around you, right? Because a lot of the people that I bring on my show, not only are they, folks that have international or national, you know, credibility and accolades and degrees and all that cool stuff. But a lot of it is just like this conversation we're having now. These women are talented, they're smart, they're educated, they're all these things. And then we get into a conversation about our real lives, right? And then I find out there is this richness within my own village, right? I've just extended my village by having these conversations. And I know not everyone is as verbose and, you know, talkative as I am. But if I can use that gift to create a platform to have these conversations in public, right, where other people can learn from these discussions and not only advocate for themselves and their family and their friends, but also put pressure on those people and organizations and systems and policies that we have that are in the way of our health and our wellness and in the way of allowing us to be able to live in an equitable society that supports and sustains our health and well-being, especially in a country like the United States of America, where we have just about every resource you can think of. And we also have every disparity that you can think of. So one of the things that we talked about was we touched on mental health challenges. We touched on racism, right? And one of the things that I was reading about was how people may or may not understand that being a person of color, and especially an African-American woman, a woman of African descent in this world, not just the United States, brings with it uninvited discrimination, prejudice, and racism, right? We oftentimes get people outside of our community sometimes criticize the Black and African community and African diaspora. Why are you always talking about race? Look, if we didn't have to talk about it, we wouldn't. If it didn't bother us and get in our way, we wouldn't be talking about it, right? We'd rather move on and talk about something else. But until that happens, where we truly live in an anti-racist society, we have to talk about it. Because one of the things that happens is that this racism gets under our skin, down to our DNA. And not only can it affect our physical health, but it affects our mental health. So can you talk a little bit more about how you see these different mental health issues and challenges that women are going through, and how this, you know, systemic racist system feeds into things like distrust, hypervigilance, and feeds into things like, and what I mean by hypervigilance is you're always concerned about having to be preemptive, having to think two steps ahead, looking and making sure that you're safe and your surroundings are safe. You're thinking about the choice of words because you know that the right, wrong look on your face, a choice of words out of that other person could mean something. It could mean something that might affect your life. So that's what hypervigilance is. It means you're always on. Right. And you don't get to turn that off until you get to a safe space. Right. And that safe space is often not out in the world amongst the general pop. Right. So as a Black person, we live with a certain level of stress just because of the skin that we're in. And it's uninvited. Okay. These are things, you know, there's certain levels of stress that we invite. Right. So like, you know, Jessica wants to invite some stress because she is interested in becoming a CLC and she knows that there's a lot of classes that she needs to take. And that's going to bring a certain level of stress because she wants to pass the tests, right? And receive the certificate. You know, there's certain levels of stress that we invite into our life. I want to buy a house, right? That's going to bring some stress, but I'm excited about what the outcome of that is, the stability that that brings, the wealth that that builds. But this is uninvited stress. Because in the process of having a baby, which is exciting, and we know it's going to be stressful, there's all these other factors too. So I'm going to be quiet for a moment and open it back up. Melba, would you like to share a little bit about that? Or Jessica, is this kind of touching on some things for you in terms of mental health and of women and mothers, birthing people?
So I think this is the direction that you're going. So when I was pregnant with my daughter, I had just went back to work after a year and a half after having my son. And as soon as I started back to work, right after my mom passed away, I found out I was pregnant with her. So I let my job know. I let my job also know I'm going to take 3 months off from maternity leave. I knew that you ain't going to pay me anyway. I'm taking 3 months. And I have 8 months to, you know, make myself irreplaceable. I mean, I know I could do that, but she, you know, my boss was accepting of that. And so when I found out about prenatally that my child was going to have some disabilities, and that made it even more like, yes, I'm definitely going to take 3 months at least. But I mean, I didn't go in it with like a rude way or anything. It was just, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. But I had a great relationship.
Self-care and advocacy is good.
Yeah, because that's another thing. I know my rights, and I know my rights as far as like, you can't fire me because this, you know, or whatever. And that's another thing. Women need to be more educated on their rights, especially their rights during pregnancy or postpartum, you know, breastfeeding rights and all that. Anyway, so whenever I came back to work, I was breastfeeding, and I knew my rights for breastfeeding, but it stressed me out because I'm just not like that type of employee. Well, I felt like, well, see, that's another thing.
What type of employee are you talking about?
That's what I was gonna say. Like the fact that I even felt that way, like, that's not the type of employee I am. I had to check myself. Mm-hmm. It's like, why are you even thinking that? Because you feel like you're not a good employee if you are asking for. So I knew my rights in North Carolina as far as how many breaks I should get and the type of space I could get just to pump during work. And I really hated myself for like thinking that way at first. And it took a minute for me to not feel that way and to feel confident about it. But I was either going to, breastfeeding was more important to me. Like, if you're not going to give me the space and threaten my job, like, I don't need to be here. You literally are not paying me enough to even do this. I just wanted to work and I like being here. Mm-hmm. But my boss, one day I went to the printer and we talked about this. So if she ever heard this, I mean, she's not going to, you know, but she actually was looking it up and she had printed off like the rules. And I think it was for our corporate office so that they would know, but they were so cool about it and everything. But I just think back to how I initially felt. Like, I know my rights, but I felt stressed out and felt like I was going to be judged and not, you know, just for asking for what I know is right. Mm-hmm. So it really did stress me. And that was about a month into after having my baby. And I knew I was going to go back to work in a couple of months, but I figured it out. I got my confidence up and everything. And now after that, all I want to do is just educate other moms on their rights. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care if you work at a convenience store or if you work at wherever, you have rights for breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And I just want moms to know that more, because that is a big hindrance on breastfeeding. I'm really big about increasing the amount of maternity leave. That is just so important to me, at least to like 12 weeks, maybe, you know, what is that? 3 months. It just sounds like the perfect amount of time. 6 weeks is not enough. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of moms probably, they get stressed when they know they have to go back to work after 6 weeks. Just like you said, how you looked at your baby and you couldn't imagine going back to work at 6 weeks when you looked at her. Mm-hmm. Imagine the moms who have no choice. Mm-hmm. And that stress that it takes, you know, they take on. I mean, it's sad. And they have to do it. You know, they have to, or it's their livelihood. And it just shouldn't be that way, especially when you're in... when you're in a country that, you know, has a certain political system that is taking away rights from women and just promoting, oh, family, have babies, this and that, you know, stay at home, don't work, moms, you know, let the dads do it. That's, well, okay. You can already tell, like, politically where our government puts its focus, what group of people it puts its focus on. And it's not the everyday woman, the majority of women. So I'm all about just women power. And especially when it comes to their bodies and pregnancy, postpartum and childcare, because I'm not going to get started on childcare costs and all that. That is literally a whole nother conversation.
Well, it does affect the mental health. And I think
it one does. Of the things That's all that, of you- that affects your mental health too, for sure.
Because you're concerned or you're worried about how
much this past summer, I thought I was going to go crazy just because I didn't have any childcare. My job was flexible and they were cool about it. And I could take my daughter to work. But I mean, can you imagine Melba? Can you imagine your daughter sitting in an office for over an hour, like a little office? It's just not going to happen.
But Absolutely not.
He was very cool about me working part-time from home and all that. But that goes back to me putting stress on myself, maybe unnecessarily, because he was okay with it. But in my head, you know,
it was going to be a catastrophe.
I just didn't want to be that employee. Mm-hmm. And mainly because I'm a woman, because I'm the Black woman in the office. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't want to. It's just like a trickle down effect of just, you know. So I think the more we come together and people know their rights, women know their rights, and just get more confidence overall, when it comes to, you know, your rights with postpartum care, maternity care, especially when it comes to the workplace after you have the baby or even before you have the baby, it'll just make women better overall.
If you're enjoying the show as much as we love creating it, consider showing your support by buying us a cup of coffee. Visit buymeacoffee.com/Nyesha Frey O. That's buymeacoffee.com/Nyesha Frey O. All one word. Each cup is just $5, and every single one helps us continue to produce, develop, and sustain the high quality content you've come to expect from Questions You Didn't Ask. Thank you for your continued support, and let's keep the conversation going. Yeah, and
I got so passionate there. Oh my God,
it's like, yeah. I mean, I have some thoughts about being that employee as a Black woman in the office. But before I get on my soapbox, I wanted to hear what Melba has to say. What are your thoughts about, you know, our society, racism, stress, you know, and all that kind of stuff for birthing people and Black women and, you know, that whole thing?
I totally agree with Jessica, especially with the maternity leave. We have to look at other countries and what their statistics are when it comes to maternal health. A lot of countries, you can be out of work for up to a year for maternity leave. So just to know, oh my God, I don't have to rush back to work. I can figure these things out. I can have more bonding time with my baby. That's huge when it comes to the mental health. I think what is great that some jobs are starting to allow dads to have a certain amount of weeks of maternity leave, which is great. Like, yes, we never heard, we never heard of that ever. And I think that's awesome and helps the mom out a lot. So like, you know, they're ready to go back to work, for instance, and dad be like, okay, if you're ready to go back to work, you can go back. I will take my leave now, so you won't be too stressed out about where the baby at. Is my baby okay? So I think that is great. And I, you know, for me, when I had my daughter, I was stressed out because I found out during my pregnancy that Lena had Down syndrome. And I'm like, oh, what am I going to do now? I didn't know, you know, where she would be at, like, as far as health-wise, how healthy was she going to be? Am I going to have to take off a lot of time and do stuff with her? And I do not remember, you know, anyone talking to me about mentally, how are you feeling now that you got all this news? Like, where are you at mentally? What are your thoughts? Someone there to help me process everything that I've been told. Like, I got told this over a phone call. Hi, we're calling to let you know about your lab results. It showed that you can possibly, your daughter may have trisomy 21. We want to bring you in for additional testing. I'm like, huh? And I'm on my lunch break getting this news. So
same here.
It's a lot to take in, you know? So it's like, oh, y'all just going to call and tell me this. I feel like you should have called and say, hey, we want to bring you in for your lab results and go over it then. So I'm hanging up off of a 5-minute phone call and I'm at work like, what the hell did they just say? You know, it's like, that's a lot mentally on you. And for me, luckily I met you guys. I didn't have any support as an African-American mom who has a child with Down syndrome. You know, there's a lot of support groups out there, but it was not catered to my community in which I'm going to be raising my child in. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's huge. Like, I love the fact Down syndrome has a huge network. Mm-hmm. Whether it's Black, I ain't gonna say that. They have a huge network, period.
Tell the truth.
They have a huge network overall, but it's not a network in regards to my community. like the place where I'm gonna raise my child at. Mm-hmm. How do I educate the people that's around, going to be around my daughter, the school mm-hmm. system and stuff like that. So that was a huge barrier for mm-hmm. me mentally. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I answered the question.
You answered it because you talked about you. I mean, both of you talked about it from your own experience, from your heart. Right. So there's nothing wrong with that. That's exactly why I asked you to come, because I knew that you were going to bring that. Right. And one of the things that I want to talk about is the perception of Black women and how we're constantly, again, hypervigilant and having to fight against these negative perceptions, having to anticipate other people's perceptions of us that might result in us losing our job, losing our pay, losing benefits, losing. Because, you know, I might be putting words in your mouth, Jessica, and you're free to correct me. But I think what's at the root of that question of you not wanting to be that quote unquote employee as a Black woman and being the only Black woman in the office is the reality that it's the conundrum of our culture and our society that Europeans made a dastardly, evil, terroristic decision to enslave mostly West African people and bring them to the United States to force them to work for free, bought and sold their children and each other, their people, in order to allow other European people, and now that I've recently learned Native American people, and that's going to be a whole nother conversation for another day, to be able to benefit and become rich off of their labor. And then turn around and call those very same people lazy. They paint our people as lazy. They continue to say, you just need to pick yourself up by your bootstraps. Otherwise, you're just complaining or you're asking for a handout and you don't deserve it. We're dealing with the stress of trying to undo that even when we're pregnant, because that same legacy and history also is rooted in the fact that women were often forced to work while they were pregnant. Forget 6 weeks of recovery post-birth. You were out there in the field picking cotton and giving birth at the same time, clean the baby up, put them in, wrap them up, put them on your back and keep picking. This is the society that birthed us. And to this day, in the year of 2024, we are still dealing with those perceptions that limit our ability to advocate for ourselves when these are things that are supposed to be in place by law. But we don't trust the law, because the law also used to enslave us. The law still chooses to pull our brothers and our sisters over and kill them in their homes. Kill them in the street. So we have this weird sort of thing going on where we're trying to bring life into this world, knowing what this life has for our children. And what you were talking about, Melba, and what Jessica, all of us connected on at that women's retreat in that suite, was that we understood that the world that our babies were growing up in was going to treat them differently, that they were going to have a different experience, and that there were certain cultural aspects of the way that we educate our family and our friends that was going to be different than our non-Black counterparts. And so we're struggling and chasing to find this community. And for us, by the time that I met you all, my daughter was what, 10 years old? You know, and your daughters are younger than my daughter. But this wasn't like in place for us before our daughters were born or immediately after we gave birth, having a support system that was made up of people that were culturally and historically connected to who we are as women or who our families are. And so you guys talked about that beautifully in regard to the different struggles that you have, the different concerns that you have. And this is when we are privileged to have even known what our child's diagnosis was. There's plenty of children and mothers that don't know, and they have to go years before they find out there's something uniquely different about my child. My child is struggling with something, and I'm trying to go to work and survive and not be that employee because I got to keep that money flowing. Because no one's going to care why I can't pay the mortgage or I can't pay my rent. And if they do care, we have to have people like Melba and people like Jessica out there that can point us in the direction of community organizations and networks and churches and whoever else that say, hey, we can slide you some rent money and we can help lighten the load, right, with some transportation. And we can help identify some resources within your insurance that can help you come up with a plan where you can survive and thrive. And so that's kind of where I wanted to go with this discussion. And I'm so glad that you all entertained it with me. Before I turn it over into aspirations and inspirations, is there anything else that y'all wanted to share or reflect on as it relates to the mental health of women who are having babies and bringing life into this world and these dichotomies? You know, we have, on one hand, we have a society that has elected people who put laws in place that say you can't control your birth and reproductive system. You must let it do what it does naturally, regardless of your circumstances. And yet, and still, they provide no additional support to help people do that successfully. And when you ask them for that additional support, they look down, because I know some people are going to listen. They're going to be like, all three of them Black women was on WIC, see? And they're going to look at it negatively. But we're here to say we deserve those resources. We need
Well, you know what?
Support.
You know what?
Go ahead, Jessica. I already know you hype. Go ahead.
Yes, I was a WIC mom, but I worked part-time for WIC while I was a WIC mom. And I joined the National Advisory Board of WIC participants. I filled out an application. I got accepted. So I was on it was a board national federal WIC department. And we met monthly. And I got invited to DC to attend the Conference on Nutrition, Health, and, well, I can't remember the name right now, but the conference was held. It was held 2 years ago. And the last time they held that conference is when WIC was formed from that conference. So they held it again. So I was able to be in the room with lawmakers, decision makers, huge companies like the dairy company, or just huge companies and just important people. And it was just so good to be there, but I went there just because I was a participant of WIC, and I just filled out a little application to be a part of their advisory board. So a lot came out of that, and not just that. The reason WIC is there is it's a beautiful thing. So I never felt, you know, embarrassed because I was on WIC. Well, actually, let me take that back. So when I had my daughter at 15 years old, that was back when they had the paper WIC vouchers. So I was 15 mm-hmm. years old. So I was just kind of, you know,
you're a child.
You know, it was easy to get embarrassed at 15 mm-hmm. years old. That's also when they had the paper food stamp books. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we had those too.
Give me some of them right now. And I would not be embarrassed.
I know. But no, I was 15 embarrassed.
Yeah.
As an adult. No, I was, the way I felt was, it's here. It's a program that's here. This is what it's here for. I fall into these guidelines, and why not? Because I'm pretty sure all the people who accepted that free money during COVID, because that went to people less deserving, you know,
speak on it.
Yeah. And those people had no problems, you know, and now, so I never felt embarrassed. I was proud of WIC. I supported it. I even promoted it when I was on the advisory board. So, cause there's so many moms that qualify that aren't on there. So I just feel like WIC is a great program, but as far as it comes to maternal health and or just breastfeeding, WIC is there to feed. So the support for maternal health and from the health department, even from the health department or post-maternal health for you or the baby, that's going to have to come from something, you know, more on the outside. So I don't blame WIC or anything or the health department, but that's where I love that Melba is a doula. And there is a call for more Black doulas. My sister was wanting to be a doula. And I think UNC had some type of program where you could get your doula certification for free or something. I don't know if that's what you were talking about before, but they are looking for more Black doulas because they see that there's a need for it. So I think if we just supported other Black women that have the same, you know, like-minded people, they just need somebody to reach out to them and bring them into the conversation, just like you did, Naisha, with me for this. So I think that the energy is out there, but we just have to gather that energy because Black women have so much power across all levels of anything in this country that we just need to own that and we will continue to thrive is how I see it. So I'm just really happy to be a part of this conversation and thank you.
You are most certainly welcome. And Jessica, either now or just as we're wrapping up, because we're coming to a close, I really love to end with inspiration, solutions, resources, models, things that give us hope, right? Because Jessica, you said it, women, and especially Black women, we have a lot of power. We have a lot of influence. We have a lot of capabilities and strength and wisdom, right? And a lot of know-how and moxie and go get them, right? And so there's not too many things that we cannot do, right? And so with that, you know, not only do I want to use this platform to lift up the voices, right, of people who have these lived experiences and ask the questions and share the information, I also want to be a place where people can come and say, they say Kamala Harris's mother, our vice president, Kamala Harris's mother, and hopefully future president, her mother used to say, don't get mad, do something about it. So I really love that. And I'm a do something about it type of woman. That's the reason why I say I do health equity research and practice. I don't believe in stopping at research. I know research is important. So as you're thinking about your career, your network, the circles that you're in, maybe even your social media feed, I don't know. What are those organizations and professionals that you look up to that give you hope? What are those models or programs that you've seen? I mean, Melba, you talked about how some countries, they have a whole year for maternity leave. What are those things that you've seen that really inspire you and give you hope, or that you hope more people would do what they're doing, or that they would receive more funding, or that maybe you would have the opportunity to partner with them? Is this something that you're doing? Because one thing that I didn't hear, Melba, is I know you have a company, and I expect you to share with our audience the name and contact information of your company. But this is a time to share. How are you staying motivated? What are your aspirations and inspirations?
So for me, I love the fact that this maternal health has become a big thing now, and I just pray and I hope that it continues to be a big thing and it's not just a fad. We find so many times that something is a fad and it's a big thing and then that's it. I just hope and I pray that it continues to go further, so we don't ever get back to this place again. I don't want history to repeat itself like it typically does. So as far as my business, I have a business called Infinity Doula Services. I am on Facebook and Instagram, but I really don't be up there a whole lot. You can email me at M as in Mary, S as in Sam, P as in Purple, ERRY 814 at gmail.com or Infinity, INFINITY Doula Service at gmail.com. I hope I spoke
perfect. Yes, I think you did. And of course, it'll be in the show notes. Of course. Her email address, she's given two email addresses. I think this is wonderful that, you know, you share the name of your business, Infinity Doula Services. I'm so excited for the work that you do. And Melba, you know, she's being very modest, but she is a very well-respected doula, especially in, and health advocate, health equity advocate, especially in Eastern North Carolina, which is a very important part of our state. And so I'm so glad to be in your number, Melba. But if you want to reach her, then of course, contact her at infinitydoulaservices@gmail.com. Is that correct, Melba?
That is correct.
And Jessica, I mean, I know that you're not necessarily in space of being an entrepreneur right now, but what are some organizations? I mean, you just lifted up WIC. I mean, I just thought that was awesome. But what other organizations do you look up to?
So I do have a company. It's not a company yet, but last spring, I graduated with my associates finally from the community college, and it was business administration, and I had to do a business plan. Okay. So I created my business plan as a lactation services business.
Nice.
I mean, I'm so passionate about it, but it will be called Mariposa Lactation Services, mm-hmm. but you know, don't look it up because it's not a company yet. But when I made the business plan, I was halfway through it. I was like, oh my God, I could do this. Like, this is actually doable. When I got to like the finance part and all that stuff. But I am a part of our town's Juneteenth Heritage Incorporated. It's a nonprofit. I'm on the board. So we do our county's Juneteenth festival every year. And it's fairly new, a few years, and we're trying to find more volunteers to do more community engagement. But I remember the first time I was asked to even help with the festival last minute, it was when I was a peer counselor at the WIC office. And I created all of these infographic flyers about specifically about Black breastfeeding rates. And so nonprofit, Juneteenth Heritage is really good about anything, you know, related to the Black community. And I'm sure they would support anything related to health and specifically Black women's health. So there's that. And I am on the board of our local Partnership for Children. And the Partnership for Children is a nonprofit. It's state funded. And their focus is from birth to 5 years old. So they focus on reading specifically, and they really do focus on childcare. So they do a lot of things about assisting people who want to get into childcare, people who want to be certified, you know, training people on what it takes to be certified. They offer vouchers or incentives for workers to be childcare workers. The Partnership for Children were actually the ones who facilitated pre-K in North Carolina until a few years ago when Head Start took over and it became NC pre-K. So it used to be through the Partnership for Children. But they also work with our local health department every year during breastfeeding week. And they provide so much support to do a huge event about the promotion of breastfeeding. I just think that if you can reach out to any, specifically when it comes to Black maternal health, there are organizations around in North Carolina that you can find and give support to, and postpartum health, breastfeeding, etc.
Thank you so much, Melba and Jessica. Oh my gosh, this is awesome. And I'm going to provide some additional resources. Please check my social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. You can find me at Nyesha Frey Consulting LLC. Also, sign up for my newsletter. That is at NyeshaFrey.com. NyeshaFray.com. You can sign up for my newsletter. You'll get lots of resources, lots of opportunities to learn more about Jessica, to learn more about Melba, and most importantly, to learn more about how to connect with organizations that are doing great work to improve the maternal health and infant mortality amongst Black women and other women in the United States. So thank you so much, Jessica and Melba. If you have any last comments, any last aha moments, this is the great time to do it.
I just want to say thank you for having us. Thank you for having this platform. Thank you for being you, because if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't know what questions to ask. So thank you.
Well, we all have it all deep down inside of ourselves. Like you said, it's kind of in the blood, right? So I'm just using the gift that God gave me, as you are. And thank God for putting us in each other's path so that we could do this work together and uplift these very important voices and stories and resources.